Hello and welcome to the BookTree podcast. This is a home for children's and young adult books and the people who create and read them. We interview authors and illustrators, publishers, literary experts, and other bookish people. We also unpack issues around literacy and writing skills, finding ways to inspire and grow young readers and creative thinkers. If you're looking for the best reads for your children, we review the best books. Hosted by me, Corinne Rosmarin, journalist and writer. So join us in exploring the ways, big and small, in which books and stories help us navigate life. Welcome to episode 14 of the BookTree podcast. Yay, we have good news to start with. The BookTree podcast was recently selected by FeedSpot panelists as one of the top 15 South African book podcasts on the web. It's really great validation for what we work on. We celebrate South African children's books, authors and illustrators, and we put the spotlight on reading and writing skills for young people. For those of you who haven't heard of FeedSpot, it's a content reader. It consolidates everything you want to follow in one organized space. So it keeps tabs on all the blogs, podcasts, YouTube channels, news publications, etc., and flows them into a single feed that updates automatically whenever new content is published. All of this helps you to manage your content, which I think is so important in also managing your time. And this podcast is a little late, but we've been hard at work consolidating and compiling all the entries for the Young Writers Competition. The competition closed on the 2nd of April, and I'm going to be announcing that we have now got over 960 new entries in, which is unbelievable. Every year we keep on growing. I'm so excited and proud, and I really can't wait to announce next month who are the best young writers in each of the age groups. There's two runners up as well, and a list of highly commended per age category. So that'll come out mid-May. Our book theme this episode is grief and loss. Children's books about grief can be a real lifeline when it's hard to find the right words to talk about all those big emotions, from sadness and grief to anger and often fear. They also show children that they're not alone. Other children have gone through this too. These books don't just comfort, they build empathy, they help children to imagine what others might be feeling. And for parents and teachers, they're the springboard that you can use to talk about what children are feeling, to lead to connection and gradual healing. I'm chatting today to Lalo Makoku, the author of a new children's book called Butterfly Heart, published by Jacana Children's Books. Lalo is a multilingual storyteller, a playwright, a facilitator, performer, and academic. Her vision is to use the arts for justice and enhancing Botu, humanity. She co-wrote an award-winning play, Dipalo, with Ginny Manning. She is the artistic director and specializes in applied theater and theater for young audiences. And she has performed the book, Butterfly Heart, at festivals nationwide, including the National Arts Festival. Lalo, welcome today.
Oh, thank you so much, Corinne.
Lalo, when someone close to a child dies, their whole world changes. They don't just suffer the loss of that person. They are left with so many questions that a child can't understand, you know, from where did the loved one go? Why did they die? It all feels so unfair. How did you approach writing this book?
That was also quite an important aspect because it's a curiosity that I feel that also it helps to open a wonderful word that you use for me is like gradually. Because these things happen, but you need to have a sense of exactly what happened. So it is the curiosity to find out, the gentleness that today brings something new that I thought it was important to approach. I work with children's issues, and we have the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of Children. And there's a specific clause that actually acknowledges the children's evolving capacity. And I always find that to be quite profound that you know that at this age, what can I say? At this particular age, how can I approach this subject matter? So that was a guiding tool for me.
Let me also just talk about the book so that people who haven't read it yet can understand what it's about. So the story follows a young girl called Neo, and she loses her close friend Mosa to a heart condition. The two girls have a very deep bond. They play together, they laugh, and they have these little heart-shaped stones they carry as symbols of their friendship. I love that detail because it made me think of, you know, when you're younger and you swear everlasting love and friendship to somebody, and You have these like little tokens, and I had that kind of friendship with a friend when I was younger. And I know that there's an intensity of friendship at that age. It really does feel like you're everything. And in the story, Moses' heart begins to fail, and Nero has to come to the realization that her friend is growing weaker. There's something not right. She doesn't quite understand, but she can see there's something not right with her friend. And eventually, Mercer actually has to go to hospital and she passes away. And as the story goes on, Nero has to learn about how fragile life is. And she speaks to her grandmother, who also, I love that figure, just trying to pass the wisdom of the ages on. And eventually she learns to go forward and carry on with other friends while keeping the memory of her friend close to her heart. Was this story inspired by a personal experience? Where did you get this friendship story from?
I like the other words that you use about the intensity of the friendship. I also had a friend. This friend was like, yes, my best friend. But I also knew that she was sick, but I didn't know what she was ill from. Recently, a friend of mine had, let's say about 2 years ago, had shared a story of her child asking her, "Why did my friend die?" It was just that curiosity of this child saying, "But why did she die? Like, can't people make her better?" That somehow it also triggered a memory of that friend of mine, because what we heard is she just got tired. She was coming to school, but she just said, "I'm tired." And within a few minutes, she had died. So it was just quite interesting how the frustration of this young one somehow triggered an old memory for me, because I never asked, like this child asked, like, "Why did she die?" I never asked that. I just never understood what had suddenly happened, even though actually I knew that my friend was not well. But she loved me very much. We loved each other so much.
Yeah, I could feel that, and I think that when children read this story, they'll connect with the friendship first. I loved your approach not to go straight away into the loss. It was building up that lovely friendship. And as they play the skipping game and the little personal jokes they share, because it's those things that you miss when the person's gone. It's like you can't believe that they're just not there anymore. And that actually also made me think of something. I think it's easier when children are raised with a very strong religious background, because then it's explained it's heaven, it's the person who's died has gone to an afterlife. But increasingly, in families that don't have a strong religious belief, death is something a little bit more vague. People don't really understand it. So I remember when I was younger, my grandmother passed away, and I was so upset that everybody wasn't crying at her funeral. I couldn't understand why they all weren't all crying. And my mom had to explain to me that because she was older and she was in her 80s, everyone was happy that she had a full life, that she had lived well, and she'd gone quite peacefully in her sleep. And I was so confused as to the concept that people were happy that she had passed away in that way. I mean, I understood she was old, but for me, the loss was so huge. And then secondly, I just kept on thinking, but you don't know where she's gone to. I couldn't grapple with that. So, how did you approach that idea? Because you're not too religious in the story. You keep it quite open, which I also like, so that people with their own beliefs can read the story. Was that a conscious decision?
Yes, a very conscious decision, because one of my backgrounds is in applied theatre, and in applied theatre, we actually open diverse voices to be heard. So the essence of inclusion is actually very important in what I do. And so if I begin to close it down to a particular religion, then I might also be closing out others. At the same time, and as a human experience, we do have something to say. And most of the time, I also make reference to the fact that different cultures actually celebrate or acknowledge death differently. I thought it might be a bit of a challenge if I were to also just to impose my own experience. In fact, when my friend had died, I also remember that in my house there was a picture of people going to heaven and hell. And my grandmother used to say, This is River Jordan. Once you cross this one, you see, if you cross this one and you've been good, you wear these white clothes. Ah, if you've been bad, you wear this one. And then I would see that those that were going to hell, they were dancing, they were drinking alcohol, music like you. But I also like to dance. Okay, so I get a bit confused, but yo, okay. But now this side, they were quite calm, very orderly. And so those binaries are the ones that have always just also confused me and fascinated me, because I also realized that humans are quite complex. It's not either or. And so when I went to see my friend in the coffin, she was wearing a white. So for me, it was like, oh, so that was the frame that, oh, okay, she's going to heaven. And my grandmother has told me that, oh, heaven, everything is awesome in heaven. So for some reason, it also gave me a sense of, it was like, I didn't want to join her. She's my friend, we're close, yes. And she's gone to this awesome place. But I didn't quite want to join her, because when I was at the funeral, I also saw there were some people that were crying. I don't know, maybe it's not so nice, but I'm happy for her.
Yeah.
I don't know how it came about, actually, that she was also sort of like with me. She sometimes comes even when I'm performing. And it was just an amazing experience for me, that small trigger of a child not understand, where did my friend go? But I never had the guts to ask where she went. But I received the information, went along, accepted it. But somehow I was still a little bit curious. But okay, she's going to heaven, because heaven and hell has been explained for me.
Yes. And I mean, that's also part of the process of the acceptance, right? Because that's one of the stages when you're grieving. And I also really enjoyed the fact that at the back of the book, you have a list of points in guidance for helping children deal with death and grief. And I think that's really helpful. And one of the points you make is to be honest and clear when you answer the questions that children ask. For example, explain what it means for a heart to stop pumping blood. And I thought that was such a good idea because, you know, if a child is ill and you want to explain that to your own children, they can often understand that concept. If you say to them, well, you know how you can jump and run around and it doesn't hurt your body, it hurts her or his body when they do that. And that's such a practical, a tangible feeling of health and sickness that I think is so powerful. You know, instead of making it so vague, oh, they're just not well, there's something wrong with them. Just those words.
Another aspect of this notion of praxis that we also see practically, what do some of these things mean? The notion of like doing, that when you do, we understand better. And I thought that was quite interesting, because also maybe being keen on teaching and learning, just one thing may actually lead to something else. The learners are being exposed to different concepts. And say, for example, if you're in grade 5 or in grade 4 and you learn about my body. So sometimes there's this very small concept that you're maybe learning in life skills or whatever subject area. But how is it relevant to my everyday living, my everyday experiences? And that's what first fascinates me in how I approach, that I'm not dealing with realism, but I'm dealing with imagination that can actually lead you to your own lived experience.
It actually makes it so much more real for the student, for the child who's learning about that. I also really thought it was important that you mentioned there that if your child seems very sad, angry, and withdrawn for a long time, that you seek further help and that you ask for help. And I think that that's also a very important point is, you know, sometimes children don't show immediate grief and they seem to be coping with everything well. And then down the line, they start to rebel, they stop maybe going to school. And I know that this is aimed for younger children, but it's such an important point to note, I think, and I'm glad that you put it in there. What age do you aim this book at? What would you say is the best?
Between 5 and 9.
Okay.
And also, I just wanted to add something that someone just said to me that was quite profound, Because when you're asking me some of the genesis of the story, one gets to almost like be attached to the story. And he said that as an artist, maybe or a creative, it also becomes emotionally important to become emotionally detached from this work. When I'm performing in one of our rehearsals, I ended up breaking down literally from doing this work. And I realized that, oh, it is this kind of like detachment. And so then when I'm telling the story and when I'm gifting readers with this kind of work, how do I also then step back and allow them to interact with the work? This person had said that now this detachment give me and my work some form of freedom to see then when it collides with real audiences, how do they react to that? And I thought, that was quite interesting because doing this work, somehow I realized that I do become emotional sometimes. It feels like I've gone to a funeral, but I mustn't go to the funeral. And I must remember that I try, for example, even when I'm performing it, and you'll see even in the story, I don't mention death, but I mention it in a not straightforward, right at the end, because I'm talking about this illness and where it's taking us to. Because I just want, and I'm hoping that young readers, when they are with their parents, caregivers, siblings, others, we can connect the dots so that this enhances what I like, which is about a conversation, a dialogue about this particular issue.
I noticed that. I noticed that you said at one point, it's sort of, you don't use the words Mosa is dead. You say Ngono sighs, Mosa had passed away. And that was the only reference you gave to the fact that she was no
Yes.
longer living. It was quite soft and gentle. And I thought that was also important because it allows it to be more than just that finite end. The conversation around it is so much bigger. And then she goes out to play with her friends, but she doesn't really want to. And that's the reality because life goes on.
Yes, and it was so hard to actually work on the ending because I also wanted the ending to be so sad. But you know, working with the editor and my mentor, Carol Brock, it was also quite interesting. Like, okay, how do we like you know the thing that you just said? Like, life moves on. So now, even when she's sad, then she looks up, she realizes that oh, they're playing, and she goes and joins them.
I thought that was very powerful. I love the fact that it actually ends with the children are all playing and she runs over to join them and they're shouting the words of the game. And those are the last words. I love that because it actually is so symbolic. Again, everything continues. And I think it's also very reassuring for children, as much as they feel like their world might have come to an end in some ways with the loss of somebody. It's just the reminder that life is there, the games are there, and everything will continue.
Life does continue in the midst of everything else that we're experiencing. Life continues. Sometimes I also make re reference to some of the tragedies that children face. Sometimes a learner disappears. Sometimes a learner is involved in a car accident, and I was with them yesterday. But today the class goes on. Okay, maybe if there's an opportunity for us to see a counselor or some form of a debriefing, it happens. But why is everybody laughing? Why is everybody going on their own lives? So in the midst of everything, actually life still goes on.
Very powerful. Thank you so much for your time. It's really amazing to speak to you and to hear your thought process and how you created it. I know creating a book is such a big project and so much goes into it. And I think it's a beautiful book to have in the world. And I think it's going to be a huge help to so many families and people. So thank you so much for your time.
I'm really grateful. Thank you so much.
So that is Butterfly Heart, written by Lalu Mokoko. It's published by Jacana. Perfect for children, I would say about ages 6 to 9, and it's available from all good bookstores. Before I end off, I do have to recommend a book that I found really powerful when I lost my own mom. I was aged 30 and my mom died really unexpectedly. And I found on her bookshelves a book called The Princess in the Kitchen Garden. It's written by Annemie and Margriet Hemans, and it is an overseas publication published in 1993. It's not easy to get hold of, but it's absolutely beautiful. And obviously, because I found it on my mom's bookshelves, she was an artist and I think she'd bought it because she loved the illustrations. But it felt like a message to me. It's about a young girl and she's missing her mom ever since her mother died. Hannah has had to look after her little brother Matthew and she has to do all the household chores. It's sort of set in a very old-fashioned family. She doesn't get any real help or attention from her father, who has buried himself in his work. And she's feeling unappreciated and sad, and she decides she's going to run away. And she goes into her mother's old kitchen garden. And what happens from there is a multi-layered tale. It's almost like a fairy tale. It's not, strictly speaking, reality, but we get two stories told at the same time. So we hear the story from the point of view of Hannah and then from Matthew, the younger brother, when he tries to understand why the sister had run away. But she carries on looking after him and making food in this outside kitchen garden that she creates. The illustrations are absolutely exquisite. They're quite tricky at points. You would definitely need an older reader, I would say at age sort of 10 and up. There's lots of text interspersed with the illustrations, but it's very intriguing because we're literally getting three different perspectives. The third perspective is the mother. You only ever hear the mother's voice, but she talks to the younger brother. And it's such a loving voice. It made me feel like my mother was speaking to me. And I found it a very comforting book. Some people find it very sad, but I think it's quite realistic. And it's sometimes good to deal with grief in a realistic way. In the end, the father realizes that he is missing the children. The little boy has gone outside to find his sister. And a giant wind comes up and carries him over the garden wall. And he's reunited with the children. It's beautifully told. I know it sounds strange, but just trust that it has a gentle, soft ending, and it really is a book that I would recommend for older children. So check it out, The Princess in the Kitchen Garden, Annemie and Margriet Hemans, and I will put all the details on the website. And that's a wrap for episode 14. Thank you so much for joining us and listening in, and please send me a message about anything else you'd love me to cover. Do give us a like and a follow if you enjoyed this episode and let your friends and family know about the podcast. Until next month, happy reading.